Today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Code Pen Radio, specifically episode 56 of Code Pen Radio. Really getting up there in numbers, folks. Thanks for joining us for this so long. We're going to call this episode number 56 RDS, which probably stands for something or something, but really it's part of AWS that also stands for something, which is Amazon Web Services. We've talked about it a number of times on the show. It's the server world and all of the fancy infrastructure-y stuff that powers CodePen and lots and lots and lots of the entire internet, because it's just that's the way things are these days. We've made a very big database migration, and we've over the history of CodePen have made a number of database migrations. This one, would you say, Mr. Tim Sabbat?
That's me.
Is one of the biggest ones we've ever made?
Yeah, I think so. In terms of scope, it's pretty large. We've done plenty of other stuff because over time, you know, you outgrow disks or you want to change machines or, you know, you've got some new configuration that you need to add or you've had a disaster, which hasn't happened to us yet, knock on wood. But like you migrate databases quite a bit in this little world. But this is probably the largest one because it had the biggest scope. We had lots of things that we wanted to get done and we wanted them to get done right.
And so that's what we're going to be talking about in this show. I also have Mr. Alex Vasquez.
Hey there.
The three of us combined our CodePen, and really for the first time ever, and I guess maybe it'll be next week where we bring her on, we have an employee now. We have one employee. We've hired Miss Marie Mosley. We will wait to talk about that until next week. Well, she'll join us on the podcast to talk about that. Really gets the distinction of the first CodePen hire ever. Which is pretty cool. So, but this week is RDS, and it, like Tim said, is a big database migration thing that we'll talk about that we did for a whole bunch of different reasons and largely went really well. So stay tuned for that. I should tell you that this episode is sponsored by Media Temple's Grid Service. Been the web hosting choice for more designers, developers, and creative professionals than any other platform. We've told you about this before. They really have it. It's like you sign up for it and you pay and you get your own little grid slice or whatever. And you can put up to 100 sites on it, 100 different things. You can put your own site on it, client projects on it. So, you know, I mean, who has 100 clients? So I don't know, some people, but you know, think you kind of become the middleman in a sense, you know, if you wanted to kind of charge your clients for hosting, which you should because it's work. You could theoretically turn that into money if you wanted to, because managing your Media Temple Grid Service account is so easy. They have a really nice UI for it. I really, truly like Media Temple's designers and what it's like when you log in and go in there and change stuff and, like, you know, do servery stuff. Like, I don't know, I need to change my FTP passwords and make a new site and tell it about a new URL I own or buy a new URL. All that stuff you can do through Media Temple, and their UI is awesome when you do that. They have, you know, they have a huge server farm, hundreds of servers working together to keep your sites online, even if, and they kind of auto scale. The grid has all some fancy tech stuff to, if all of a sudden your site blows up, can handle it for you. Use coupon code CP25 for 25% off hosting if you go sign up for Media Temple's web hosting, which I've used for a long time and totally like. RDS, there's lots to say about it. I even did the pre-work in this podcast of listening to Amazon's little cartoon movies where they explained it to me.
Those are the
Tim's going to be our cartoon movie. Yeah.
The guy on their cartoon movies cracks me up. He's like, imagine a world where databases are scaling infinitely. Oh, okay. I'm imagining. Nice.
So I don't even know what it stands for. Does it matter? It means databases on AWS.
Yeah, so it's relational database service is what they call it. And that's their like catchphrase for all different types of DBs. In our case, it's MySQL, but they do like Aurora, which is a flavor of MySQL, and they do Postgres.
Is it? I want to talk about Aurora in a little bit because I have questions.
We will. Yeah, we'll be talking.
So before what Tim, I think your strategy was, and we've talked about databases before, but I'm going to buy a AWS box. I'm going to install MySQL on it, and I'm going to use MySQL on a server. Just like hand roll it. You can do that. That's a thing you can do. That's what we did for a long time, right?
Yeah, and AWS definitely makes things easy for you because like they have things like disks and stuff that you can segment from the actual box, so we could snapshot the disks and do all kinds of stuff. But basically we were like renting EC2 instances larger and larger as we got larger and larger, and like you said, installing it and having a bunch of configuration tasks surrounding it. And that's the way it worked before.
But we didn't use, Amazon wasn't like, this box is specifically for a database necessarily.
No.
It's just a box and you can do whatever you want on it.
Yes.
And we happened to use the box in that way. But RDS is very specifically for databases.
Yeah, they specifically tune the operating system to handle the stuff properly. They, you know, have configuration that they suggest, and they've got configuration you can't even change because they're like, it's too important for you to switch this toggle on or off or whatever. It's like, you know, they kind of protect you from yourselves in a sense. And in the past, I've always been sort of afraid to commit to getting involved with, like, you know, the vendor lock-in, I guess, around these managed services. But in this case, I spent so much time worrying about and dealing with and reading about MySQL that, like, it just seemed like going to a managed service was a better choice.
Yeah. So when you're on RDS, it can be MySQL, but it can be a handful of other different database technologies as well. We just happen to use MySQL, and we've looked at other ones and have actually made steps towards other ones in the past, or at least done some consulting work to think about things like Postgres. And I always found it kind of weird because it was like there wasn't like a lot of obvious reasons why we should change.
Oh my God, that's a discussion entirely separate from this podcast. Yeah, you could get a database guru that'll tell you precisely why we should not be on MySQL. But for our needs, for our very, very simple needs for our website, yeah, MySQL is perfect. It's great and everybody understands it, and we're not trying to do anything fancy with it, so perfect.
So, I mean, imagine what it takes to change a database, though. Okay, obviously we can't lose any data in this migration. We have to have 100% perfectly move all this data from this server here to these servers over there. Ideally, we do it, and it's not just, of course, you can't lose data, but like, think a cutover gone wrong can lose data as well. So if you were nervous about your ability to do this, one thing you might do is just take your website down, be like, no new data allowed. because I'm going to cut over and do all that work. And then as soon as that's done, then I'll come back online. So that would be a way to not lose any data. But I think, you know, isn't there like faster, fancier ways to do this where you're replicating data? Because in the end, you know, spoiler alert, we were down for what, 8 minutes or something? Like,
yeah,
it was pretty amazing.
Well, it would take like half a day to import our data. So if we were to take a downtime as it stands now, and try and move the DBs, it would literally be like
the site. If I was in charge of this, I'd be like, all right, let me make a little fancy downtime page, and then and I'll export the database and I'll import it over here. Like, just straight up, like that process would take us 12 hours.
It would take us a long time.
Because the database is so big, right?
It's pretty big, and like, just,
you can't do that.
That's not the way people do this sort of thing. It's just not. Once you are up and online, there are tools, and they're not even fancy tools. They're just designed and built and been used since version one of MySQL that deal with replication. And so those are the things that we use for that.
So in my non-techie, well, whatever, I shouldn't say non-techie, but my brain that doesn't deal with this stuff very often, is there a moment at which, let's say somebody stars or hearts something on CodePen, that goes into the database somewhere, that they've hearted that pen? Does it get saved to both databases at the same time? Isn't that kind of what's happening? There's a moment at which there's two databases that have the exact amount of information kind of in real time.
Yeah, so that's replication in a nutshell. In the MySQL world, you have a instance that starts up. A row that's written, and then the master kind of writes the value from that from that master instance off to a slave. So there is like what they call replication lag. There's like milliseconds or sometimes seconds in which the data exists on one server but not the other. But there's like a bunch of stuff called journaling that sort of ensures that even if that were to break down or not work properly, that you can recover from that essentially. But yeah, essentially you're running one query on the master and a second query on the slave.
Cool. And that gets done, and then you feel safe at some point to kind of take down the one that we're trying to get rid of and then have a new slave.
Yeah, that's the idea. So in our case, we had the master running. We had a slave running that's like sort of our disaster recovery one. And then we had another one that we were calling basically mirror. And that mirror was running as a replication of the master. And the idea was we were going to move from the mirror to RDS so that we don't do anything to the master DB that could possibly cause problems, nor would we do anything to the slave. So this is sort of its own separate world where master values are being replicated to, but we won't destroy anything or hurt anything if we make a mistake.
Pretty cool. And this all happened, and it went down, and it's okay. But before this happened, there was a moment where we're like, okay, we should get on RDS. And there's more reasons why we went with RDS that we could talk about as well. And you are experienced with MySQL. You've worked at lots of companies. You've dealt with MySQL for a long time. You have experience with AWS. It seems like kind of a perfect thing for you to deal with. But there was some reasons that we're like, you know what? But also,
yeah,
especially now that we have a little bit of money, that we should probably like, and as we alluded to in the last episode, which we called experts, we should maybe reach out to some experts. And some of that was still as much experience as you have some fear.
Yeah. I mean, so I basically we've got years of experience with CodePen and then other companies. But the thing is, I'm not a DBA. And we rarely touch the DB. Like the thing runs like a black box. You know, it just sits out there and it takes queries and everything works. And I've like,
and by touch you mean like add new stuff, remove stuff,
that like, or like index yeah,
columns.
Unlike the servers on which these things run, which I'm highly familiar with tearing down and rebuilding. You know, we've probably rebuilt hundreds of servers, 500 servers over time because we do a lot of prototyping and stuff, auto scales in and out. We've only rebuilt. The MySQL array, like maybe four or five times. And so what that means is over 3 years, like if I just haven't built up any real reflexes. If something goes down and if something breaks, it's kind of, I've got to reach way back into my memory bank to figure out what the next steps are. And I'm somewhat familiar in that world, but not highly familiar. So to me, like the fear is the big thing. I don't want to do anything wrong that would sort of ruin our stuff. I mean, you know, we do disaster recovery, but like in the past, our shortest cutover was 23 minutes. With RDS, like the cutover maximum time, their SLA says 2 minutes. And in practice, we were finding it was much, much quicker. You know, other things regarding disaster recovery, it takes like 30 minutes on a good day for us to rebuild from a snapshot. And it could take hours from a dump, like we were talking about before, where you like dump from the old stuff and you pull it into the new stuff. If somehow the snapshots were broken and we had to restore from an eight-hour-old dump.
Okay, so a snapshot is like a faster way to recover for just for people listening to this, right? We take these snapshots regularly throughout the day. I'm not even sure how often we do it, but because we have those, you can recover from a snapshot quick, but not that quick. It's still 30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
and if you literally had to go type MySQL import blah 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 into the command line, that would take half a day.
Oh yeah, it would take a really long time. So the snapshots themselves, the reason why they're different from dumps is they're deltas, meaning that like we update the snapshots like every hour we were taking a snapshot, and it doesn't save the entire DB out. It just saves a snapshot of the DB, like what has changed from the last time we were working with the DB. And that's all sort of disk-based stuff. To put that in perspective, it takes longer than an hour to do the dump from MySQL just to the disk.
I see. That's why, and we've talked about that before. That happens from the slave, right? So we don't tie up the main DB.
Right. Yeah. So basically, like with disaster recovery and with the server in general, my big fear is that we're going to mess something up, and I'm going to mess it up in a way that's not recoverable, and I'm going to have to restore from these snapshots or from these dumps. And it just, the that idea kind of frightens me. And then the other idea of fear is like, what if I'm out of town, or what if I'm like in town but not near my computer? There, on top of the 30 minutes on a good day from a to rebuild from a snapshot, I have to get back to the computer to get that going. Or what if I'm camping and I'm out all weekend and not within cell service? Like, the idea here is like, we're trying to take the worry out of this thing. And in our case, like, going with a managed service just seemed like the right idea.
Well, we have Alex here. Right. Alex is a highly good computer skilled programmer. Alex is the best we got. I don't know anybody better, but Alex deals with this stuff even less, right? I mean, Alex can read docs and figure stuff out, right? But
right. I mean, we've had these discussions when Tim actually really does like to go camping. And so he would tell me, you know, I'm going to be outside of cell service, which is always scary for me, because if the CodePen pingdom alert comes up and it's a database related error, he would leave me with a wiki of like, here are the steps. And at the bottom of all these steps where like I basically am logging onto the AWS console, which I can do, but at the bottom is like, call this person who's an expert. After that, it's call Percona and pay them whatever they want. And then after that, it's just full-on panic, you know?
It's like pray was the last step.
So it's nice because, like, I don't know if Tim will explain this later on, but, like, RDES offers you the ability to hot failover, right? To failover to a slave automatically.
Oh, yeah, that's the
and big. It's documented, and it's just part of the standard setup for RDS. We're not doing anything fancy with RDS. We're doing like straight up normal stuff that RDS does, right? There's nothing bespoke or unique about what we're doing.
Not at all. That's the whole RDS value add, really. I mean, you literally could call up AWS right now and be like, hey, the server's down, our server guy is out, can you get us back online? And because they manage everything, including the backups and all that stuff, there's a support engineer that could get our site running, even though they have no idea what our system is like. Whereas, like, if we were to call up in that like disaster scenario we were referring to, if Percona had to be hired on a like an emergency basis, there's still setup time for them in the sense that they have to like figure out how to even get onto our boxes. We have to get their SSH keys on there, and then we have to explain to them like how things are set up, and they have to kind of just feel their way through it. Whereas like RDS is a known quantity. Everybody in their, you know, in Amazon, in the Amazon world or consultant world understands how that stuff works. So they just step right in and they're like, okay, this is an RDS box. I understand what's going on here.
Right. And also, I think part of the deal is that Tim and I have always been application developers, always been web app developers. So the way that we use MySQL is pretty standard. We really don't do anything bleeding edge or anything cool with MySQL. So CodePen can run on a standard deployment of RDS and never really have a problem. If you're doing something fancy, maybe that's not good for you. But for us, it's been great.
Yeah, triggers, stored procedures, all these things that like a true DBA is going to come in and be like, oh, we could totally speed this process up. We're going to get this going and we're going to add all this fancy database stuff. We don't do any of that. We literally use it to like put stuff in and pull stuff out. And so you could replace MySQL for us with like almost any database engine and it would work just as well because we're just not sophisticated enough. And I'm not saying that. It's almost like we're trying to avoid the sophistication because why deal with the headache? If everything works properly in a completely standard setup, why not just go with that, you know? Until you need the complexity, stay away from it.
It's even related to – I always kind of like the idea of running a stock machine. You know, I think the longer you have a computer, the further it gets away from that. You know, you start installing – weird little third-party software and stuff and tuning things up just how you like it. But if if your favorite type of working environment is like the computer that you buy right off the shelf, it works. And that concept is related to editors as well. You know, Tim's so comfortable in Vim. Well, I think that's a big bonus for Vim is that, you know, sure, you can run it as software on your computer, but you can also log into just about any console there is out there and have your normal working environment, just a, you know, VIM space file name away.
Yeah. I mean, to take that metaphor a bit further, yeah, I work in Vim and yeah, RDS is sort of like that in the sense that I have this control file called a vimrc, and that's like the thing that explains how I use Vim. And there's basically the same sort of thing. There's a my.cnf file.
There's dot files for Vim that's, so you can throw that on the server and it will respect your,
like, my settings,
whatever key commands or whatever.
Sure. So there's the same concept in RDS. It's, or in MySQL, it's a my.cnf file. And essentially that's what RDS allows you to tune up, is like you bring in your RDS file, you put it in their format, and then, you know, you've got this stock machine that's sort of configured the way you want it to. Hmm. So yeah, RDS, awesome.
So we talked a bit about experts, and Percona came up a few times. Apparently they're like, I don't know, the big name, I guess, in helping with databases and stuff. And we got, I think, I don't know how much we want to dive into this, not too much, but we got some quotes from some different companies, and kind of Percona seemed like not the cheapest, but definitely they seemed like the best in our estimation, I guess. I didn't talk to them. You guys did.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to listen to that, listen to our expert show. But essentially they killed the sales process. It was amazing. And they followed through throughout the entire process. They were great to work with from beginning to end.
Wow. Okay. That's good. I didn't know how it kind of ended up, but there was some, I mean, as far as if there's any problems to have, they were minor problems in how, like what kind of the expectations were before the work got started. Cause first of all, it wasn't particularly cheap, right? We said, this is what we want. And then there was some they thought they were going to give us like a document that explained all the stuff that we wanted to do. And it wasn't just move to RWS, but it's RWS plus fix any slowness problems that you can find, plus, you know, teach us about stuff, plus like fix some character set issues, plus, you know, whatever. So there's work to be done, and they thought they were going to give us like instructions how to do that. And Tim was like, you expected a little bit potentially more handholding through it.
Yeah, it was interesting. This is my first real experience with contract negotiation, and I like kind of just like, so I talked to an engineer first and I talked to a salesperson second, and in the engineering discussion I thought I'd explained very well that I wanted them to basically hold my hand all the way through, this thing is set up, like we're running, right? So the engineer types up what he wants, we create a statement of work, and we give that to the salesperson, and the salesperson interprets that in a different way and basically sends back over the statement of work that I gleefully signed, because I thought the statement of work said what I thought I said to the engineer. But we get off this call and we start talking to them, and they lay out everything that's supposed to happen, and it does not include the cutover. And I'm like, have to get back on the phone with those guys, and I have to talk with them again. And essentially the salesperson's like, well, that's not a 2-day engagement. That's a 3-day engagement. I learned a lot, I guess, in terms of that. Like we went on from there to do the, after that contract negotiation, we went on to do the legal stuff for
So you signed something with your signature on it.
Yes.
So because now I'm worried. I'm like, we have numbers here, but I wonder if it says in there that you're not supposed to do that because they have to negotiate with other people too. So I guess I'm going to not tell you what the numbers were, but they, you know what I mean? Because I think there might be some danger there. So
fair enough. Anyways, yeah. So the contract value went from one value to another value. It went from a 2-day engagement to a 3-day engagement, and that changed. I still don't feel like I was hoodwinked or anything. I think it all worked out very, very well. I just think that I learned that I need to more carefully pay attention to the documentation.
Yeah, I mean, like, we both read that document, and I didn't. It was, I think we both assumed that obviously we're going to need help with the cutover. It was just so obvious that that's what we wanted.
Right.
And after reading the document, we should have like really parsed that statement of work, because it's telling you exactly what they'll deliver.
Right. Yeah. It didn't literally say they'll cut us over. We assumed it. And that's like what I was trying to say earlier is we went through this process of taking money, and it completely changed my idea of how I'm supposed to deal with this stuff. Like I really did start sitting down and parsing these documents out and sort of taking notes on them for myself rather than sort of skimming them like I did for this contract. So yeah, probably a different subject altogether. We could do one just completely on contracts, but yeah.
Well, we've engaged in a number of them at this point. So it was a bunch of money, but it wasn't, you know, I don't know, whatever. It wasn't, I don't know, new car money, but it wasn't, you know, it was more than 1,000, less than 10,000. How about that?
There we go.
Cool. It went well. It's done. it was a multiple day engagement. It was kind of funny. We were in Wisconsin for some of it. We're not anymore, but we were at my house, and it was a nighttime thing because that's generally when you do database work. You know, keep it off peak hours, at least for your largest demographic.
Yeah, so it was a Thursday night from 8.
Yeah, totally. Me and Alex are downstairs playing poker with some friends. Tim's upstairs.
I was playing poker with our database servers. Yeah. I'm all in.
I kept checking my phone and stuff and seeing, because there was a particular test I could do to see if it was done, which was to save an emoji character in the code, and it would either work or not work. And at one point it started to work and I knew Tim was done. So at some point I went upstairs because I assumed at that point that means we're done, right? But it kind of did, but I think there was still some work that had to be done. And Tim's like, could you leave please? Because I'm still in like the like super danger. I don't know. Like there's still a period of time where it's not so done that he felt like,
I just know me.
Toast beers, you know?
Yeah. I just know me. I can't, like, if my attention is split, I'm in trouble. And we were still at a point, I'll explain in our like moving the, I've got a section here that just kind of talks about what we did step by step. And we were in like still in pool B and we were supposed to move back to pool A, and there's like 20 steps to get me there. And I
didn't want to. You still had to do them or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't done them. And I didn't want to celebrate till we were completely out of the woods.
So we hire Percona, you have a sales meeting, you have an engineering review, and then you settle on some engineering tasks. We had a big list of things that we wanted to do. I think you guys were looking at slow queries or just queries in general. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure things out. We had a list, you know, Tim had figured out some tables that were in weird character sets and stuff, and just had a laundry list of things to go through. So in addition to moving data, there was some of those things that were done. So what are these steps? Is this too boring to walk through step by step?
No, I think it's pretty useful if you're doing one of these kind of conversions. I'll touch on the stuff that we had to do. I'm not going to go deep into detail, mm-hmm. but like during the engineering tasks, he basically had us adjust the schema. So we're moving from UTF-8 to UTF-8 MB4. And what that does is there are a larger number of bytes to represent each character in UTF-8 MB4, the character set we were moving to. And what that does is it makes the maximum size of if you've worked with databases before, the maximum size of a varchar column, which is a pretty common column, move from 255 characters down to 191.
That's weird. Because each character is bigger, so the whole string is shorter?
Basically, yeah. So the amount you can store in that type of column actually becomes, the number of characters you can store in that type of column becomes smaller. And what that also does is it affects your query key space, meaning like if you've set a index on a column, you now have fewer characters to work with in that index. And so you have to make sure that works with your data as well. You know, you have to make sure that your data is unique up to 191 characters instead of 255 characters.
So if somebody had a name in our database that was in a varchar field and their name was 200 characters long,
we truncated it.
In
our case,
we had to do that.
Yeah, we did a bunch of data analysis, and we came up with a handful of people who were outside of these, outside of the parameters. Like name was a perfect example. We had like several different things. You know, a user has a username, a post has a name, what else? Collections, all these kind of things.
But 255 is pretty large.
It was insane.
I mean, two tweets long, you know?
Totally. The person who had a name that was longer than 191 characters was obviously spam. Like, right. we looked at the person's username and they were obviously spam. It was someone trying to put PHP code into the username to see if, like, somehow we would execute that, which is crazy. But yeah, they did that. So basically, we ended up with this, like, we ended up with our current data and we ended up with a new schema. And the schema kind of defines the type of it's sort of a schema is a description of what type of data you're storing. You're going to store long characters here. You're going to have a 10-character long thing here. You're going to have a blob type for this type of column. You know, it generally kind of describes how you want your database to be set up, how you want the data to be shaped, I guess, when it comes back or when it's stored. So that was the task to get the schema in place. That was probably the most involved that Percona had to get. They had to do a lot of analysis to kind of get us in that place and get me to even understand what that meant. Because I'd read these docs before. Like, okay, this is how you move from UTF-8 MB4, and it never really sunk in. So like it took a lot of sort of getting, it took a lot of explaining to get me there. But yeah, so we've got this schema, and then I'll kind of just run down the steps that we took. So you create a third box, and we were calling that the mirror. Like that's the one that's a box that's sort of hanging off or replicating from master. We import the adjusted schema, the one I talked about above, onto that. And then we take a MySQL dump of the master, and we run that against the mirror box, the one I was just talking about. We're calling that an import. So we import the data onto the mirror box, and then we turn replication on, so that mirror is now listening to master and says, everything that you do on master, I'm going to do on this mirrored slave. We set up an RDS replication box, and we set up RDS, like basically we spin up an instance inside the RDS system, and then we turn replication on from RDS to the mirror box. So now we've got this chain where it's going master, mirror, RDS. You run a checksum, meaning you like push some data down the pipe, and you make sure that everything makes it from one place to the other. And then you also checksum the tables to ensure that they all equal one another. And then you create, so that kind of gets the database in place. The databases are now synced up. We're ready at some point to switch over from our master to this RDS system, kind of leaving the mirror alone, because mirror is really only used for like the schema migration and stuff. So on the night, you set up a second set of servers. Basically, we call this like an A-B pool. A being the servers that are up and running, and B being like the new servers that we're going to switch to. And by servers, I mean these are application servers. These are the things that literally connect to the DB. And you have each one of those behind a load balancer. The new pool, the B pool, now points to the new DB, and the A pool points to like your old system. It basically points to your old MySQL instance. The B pool, the one pointing to your new instance, isn't doing any writes. It's just reading, but you know that everything there works and is ready to go. So you take a downtime on EC2, meaning we throw up a downtime page behind the main A pool load balancer. You do a flush tables with read lock, meaning you stop the master. You stop any writes from happening on the master. You let anything...
So there is a little bit of time where you just can't accept any new writes.
Yeah, and any connections at all, right? So yeah. At that point, you're saying no more stuff is coming in. So this flush table with read locks happens, and then you let the replication catch up on this mirror, and then you let it catch up on RDS. And once you're certain that RDS is ready, you've got these like this B pool that we're talking about pointing at the RDS instance, and you essentially at the DNS level switch the thing over. So you're no longer pointing to that A pool, you're pointing to the B pool, which is pointing to RDS. You check that the site works, you push new credentials back up to the A pool, meaning like you put the login information that the B pool has onto the A pool, and essentially that's the setup. You turn off the old servers and you do a little drinking.
So interesting. 191 is the new Varkar. That's great. And part of that is literally we chose. It's not like I don't think you're forced to be on MB4, right? Or UTF-8 MB4. We wanted it because emoji.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you pay a penalty, right? You got to think about this from a data perspective. They don't have like true UTF-8 support because for the most part, and I guess this isn't as true now as it used to be when, you know, this first came out, but for the most part, people aren't using high astral characters, or maybe they're not necessary in the business world. So they're going to sort of like err on the side of data savings, right? They want to make sure that maybe the data size is going to be as small as possible because we are literally storing more characters now than we were before, or more bytes per character than we were before. But we want that stuff, so we turn it on.
We really did want that stuff too. It was perhaps one of the most common support requests, and I say that in that like it was like maybe every couple of days or once a day we'd get a support request in some format from it, which is, you know, I'm sure in some companies laugh at that kind of frequency, but to us that's pretty common. If somebody writes in almost every day with a "why can't I save my pen?" because we weren't doing a very good job of catching it and telling you why you couldn't save your pen because it was a rather obscure error, and we actually had an open an issue to deal with it, and we just never did because whatever, we screwed the pooch on that one. But now because we always knew the fix was coming, and Now you know what I mean? So now it came. You can. And so it's funny that, okay, think of what we got from RWS. We got, you know, the fact that we can make more use of like Alex, because now he can do RDS stuff because it's so much more standardized by Amazon and it's just more useful to this thing. Tim's sweating less bullets because we get all this like auto replication action, you know, like your data, you know, I try to spin these things into sales pitches a little bit, but of course only when they're true. It's true that your data has never been safer on CodePen, which makes it a little thing, but it's kind of true. Like it's like almost impossible for us to screw up your data on RDS. Like it's just,
yeah. You know, it's definitely, we sleep better at night. Like whenever we go on vacation, there's a lot more redundancy built into the business. And that's a great feeling to be running a business that, you know, isn't going to fail the moment one of your developers walks out the door to go camping.
Yeah, it makes me feel a lot better to walk into that.
That's big news. That's a big thing. We have a relationship with Percona now so that they kind of know what's going on and we can talk with them. We fix some slow queries. We have, they're on bigger boxes. There's more memory. There's more speed. There's all this stuff. But it's so funny to me that, okay, that the blog post, you know, kind of has to be, you can save emoji now on CodePen, which is the most trivial part of this entire thing. Really the tiniest little piece of trivialness attached to this entire thing. But you know, people, our users actually had a problem with it. And now that actual problem they actually saw is actually fixed. So it's not, you know, it's not to be downplayed. It's just that
I'll tell
so
you what,
much
this,
more working.
No, as a guy who works in operations, like this is what's interesting to me is this is maybe one of the first times that our users have seen the outcome of some of the operational stuff that I do. Like this literally has a user-facing component to it, whereas 95% of the op stuff that I do does not. So the yay emoji.
Okay. So that is our big change to RDS. Maybe we'll kind of end it because it went a little long for a CodePen radio. Not long, but we're at the moment where I wouldn't want to dive into a huge new topic. But one of the things that we've talked about is it's kind of nice to get on RDS because it may open some doors to some other future things. One of those is Aurora. And like I was saying in the early episode, I listened to the cartoon movie about Aurora too. And I'm like, is this even MySQL anymore? I don't understand it. I don't understand what we get from it. So
maybe when we do the migration to that, we can sort of talk more about it.
Okay.
We'll do another, an entirely new topic on that.
Yep. And we have lots of more topics coming, plenty of topics to bring us just into the brisk fall and winter of 2015 and beyond, I'm sure. So thanks for listening. Thanks to Media Temple for sponsoring the podcast. You know, like I said, the blog.codepen.io is hosted on Media Temple. We keep it there on purpose, so it's separate from our normal boxes. And it's even on it's a different company than the rest of our stuff is. So the chances of it being down at the same time something else is down is, you know, it was just a choice we made. And I think it's smart. Plus, I'm more apt at handling what hosting is like on Media Temple and have people I can talk to there and just have been there so long that I feel comfortable with all that. So yeah, we literally use them and now they sponsor us. So what a fun full circle world. It's also sponsored by a cool company called CodePen. They do all this great stuff. It's like a code editor in the browser.
Oh, I've heard of that. That's a good software.
Gosh, yeah, they really pay for the bandwidth around here. And the editing and stuff. So they happen to have a job board at codepen.io/jobs. If you hate your job, go over there and check it out. There's lots of jobs available, tend to be front-end developer kind of jobs. Hard to hire. I just was back from a conference talking to somebody about it, and they're it was interesting because they really echoed my thoughts on just why it is so hard to hire. And part of the reason is that you need a lot of companies need front-end developers who aren't necessarily like web tech companies. You know, everybody needs a front-end developer, like for every company to build their websites, because every company needs a website. So they're kind of spread out across the stuff. And sometimes you'll see that a lot of the jobs on the CodePen job board are agencies or things where they know that. But sometimes the jobs are like, I want to work for the World Wildlife Foundation or something that, you know, you don't necessarily think of as a tech company, but still definitely need front-end developers as well. I didn't do a very good job of selling that, but you know what I mean. Anyway, codepen.io/jobs.
Thanks, everybody.
Wonderful. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye, everybody. 7,
1 3 2 9 7 6 0 3 1 8